Willkommen zur deutschen Übersetzung von Dezentralisiere deine Nextcloud. Welcome to the English translation of Decentralization of your Nextcloud. Live from the 338, all talks at the Congress are live translated between English and German and to one additional language. We appreciate your feedback. Please use the hashtag #C3T. Your translation for this talk. Buchspreed and was 10,000
mit denen man Dateien online bearbeiten kann, mit Leuten teilen und so weiter. Alles super Sachen. Das Problem ist,
also the problem is we just learned they have all terrible workflow or by signing these terms of condition. Therefore, we thought in 2020 we do it ourselves and started to build a setup at home for our direct neighborhood. That's about 50 people to build a structure with Nextcloud for about 50 people and have a common calendar. For common used rooms.
Was ist eine Nextcloud? Also,
what is a Nextcloud?
Anfänger-Talk zu geben, deswegen wollten wir euch noch mal kurz zeigen,
was give a talk for beginners. This is a Nextcloud. This is a service where you can easily upload files. That's done by the users. Everybody can has its own workspace. You can use the files for yourselves, you can share the files, you can work at the files, a lot of things, and you can expand it. There's a little bits to be seen at the top. There is a lot of apps and plugins. You can build in calendars, for example. You can make calendars, you can ask questions. And either for yourself or shared with others. So we get over this. When we thought to give this talk, we were forced, and this is the best of this preparation to the talks, that the setup we built and expanded for the years had to recover it from the beginning, step by step, and documented it. There's a repo where step for step with every line you can come to the same result as we show you right now, the repo we show at the end. In this talk, we explain on high level all the steps and do not get into the details, how to install that, but it's all documented very well. When you started this and you have a Linux server at the beginning and you learned how to set up services by yourself very easily and post it, when you once have it, you get a little bit addicted.
Genau. Fangen wir mal mit unserer Nextcloud an.
Start with your Nextcloud. I explain a little bit to our tools that we're choosing. For hosting, there's a big number of support technologies. We try to use a simple setup with a few tools only that you won't be hit by all the stuff. So if you want to host a lot of Nextcloud, so it's as easy as possible. You can add modules for additional services. It's like everything that is reachable from the internet has to be secure. There are more details in the repro at the end. The point we are going off from, what you can use as a server, you need a further device as an admin machine to serve the website from, and the helping tools, and we suppose Limited.
Das ist sehr einfach zu machen. Wir haben alle Kommandos, sorry, die ausgeführt werden müssen, sind alle im Repo. Da könnt ihr dann rein.
So. Okay, so it's everything is in the repo, so you can look that up. But it's helpful to have seen a command line before. So, and the end state is this. We set up 38c3.fun just for fun, and we zoom in so you can see that. And there's this official Nextcloud scan, and you can have your Nextcloud scan that is reachable from the internet, and it checks some sets, if it's encrypted, the setup, HTTP header settings, and especially it has the latest patch level, and the major version is still supported, it says. So if you follow our repo, then you get an A-plus site, and it can't get any better than that if you do that, and that's what the manufacturer offers and the vendor will offer. And if you do things like that, it has to be patched. That's very important. So, Nextcloud all-in-one, what's that? This is there's the Nextcloud Limited, Nextcloud GmbH. Nextcloud is open source, and there's this company that offers this and maintains the source code, and they have a recommended minimal setup. This is called all-in-one setup. And when we started in 2020, it wasn't available, so it's really probably a wonderful setup. It's really batteries included, and you click once and everything happens under the hood, everything that we have seen. We didn't use that and we don't talk about that here, but okay, all right. And we don't have a lot of time, so we really have to do that quickly. The system environment, so what is it? What do we want? Here's behind your Fritzbox, behind your internet router. Doesn't need to be a Fritzbox box, it can be any router. And there's a port forwarding from port 443 into the system environment. And the system landscape here consists of the hardware, which is a notebook in our case, and there's a Ubuntu operating system on it. And on the Ubuntu, there we have Git, Docker, and Jenkins. Git is for the repository, for source code management, it's pre-installed. Docker is a container virtualization, and we talk about that a bit more in a later slide. And Jenkins is a tool to automate jobs. So Jenkins will automatically do the patching for us. And in the application layer, we have the Nginx Proxy Manager. This is for SSL certificate management, so you get HTTPS. So it uses Let's Encrypt certificates, which are free. I have Nextcloud itself, which is the app that we want, and it needs a Postgres database. And Nextcloud's photos and so, they are directly on the hard disk, but metadata such as user and passwords and so on are in the Postgres database. All right, then hardware. Okay, so that's that much for the theory, and we start with hardware selection. And it depends on what you really want to do and what you really already have. Maybe you don't really have to start with the super perfect server setup if you really want to try it at first. Perhaps you have a notebook lying around that you don't need anymore, and that's probably maybe just enough for the beginning. What we just saw, the Nextcloud that I showed, that 38c3.fun, that was in preparation for this talk. We just bought this via classifieds and for €80, and it has reasonable performance. There are two variants in our experience. You start something and do it for trying it out, and then do something else, and then you didn't need it for a long time. Or maybe it's a lot of fun to you and keep using it, and then you think, maybe I should have used better hardware in the beginning, and was really the second variant with us. But now we have a little notebook. It's theoretically possible with a Raspberry Pi. We discourage that because it has, in our experience, not enough power. It should really be at least notebook power. So here's what we started with 4 years ago. We used an SoC system, so mainboard and chip soldered together, and we used a service case, and that was about €450 in total. and 200 euros of that was 8 terabytes hard disk. It depends on whether you need that or not, but you can read that up in the repo. And it has more use cases now. We have done that for several households. We have a streaming server and a media server and a lab environment. So when you really have a Linux server in the in your network, you will find uses for it. So we are really, really satisfied with our hardware so far. Not too dated. There's a gaming processor, halfway recent. It's some generic benchmark for CPUs that you see. And the CPU that we are currently using is the third line. It's the laptop that we bought. It's, of course, different from a gaming CPU, but it's not really what you need. That's why you don't recommend the Raspberry, because it plays in a league below that. And what did we upgrade here from 8 gigabytes to 32 gigabytes of memory? Instead of 3 apps, it's now running 30 apps. And if you really have to decide what kind of memory you install, really rather use a few big modules rather than small ones, so it's easier to extend that in the future. One more tip for the CPU, if you really have to select one, if you buy it new, then really look at how much electricity it uses, because in the best case it will run 24/7, and so that really adds up. And keep an eye out for that, and you don't really need the best performance, but think about electricity costs as well. And we really added another hard disk, so we now have 8 terabytes and upgraded to 12 terabytes. Really keep some slots free and buy fewer, bigger disks, so you don't have to swap out everything later. All right, software. We have, we recommend LTS versions, that is long-term support of Ubuntu. We use a Ubuntu server without graphical user interface because we just want to build a server that doesn't have a monitor and sits in the cupboard or in the rack, and we started with 20.04 and now are running 22.04, and our prototype for this talk is running on the current 24, and it really works the same everywhere. You just use the latest one with the long-term support if you want to start. And our approach is really don't install it on the operating system directly, but install everything within Docker containers as far as possible, which the advantages of Docker I will tell you in a minute. But this is for beginners. So I don't know if you can see the pasta pictures here. On the left, there's pasta in the fridge without anything. And on the right hand, it is containerized. We have all different kinds of pasta in separated from each other in the containers, and that's how we like to have our applications. So you can just remove a container and replace it with another one without disturbing anything else.
So we now get into the doing. We have to set our if you come from Windows and you have no Linux, it's easiest to use a Rufus, that's where you can set up live systems. When you do not come from Windows but from Linux, you know how to install Linux, you're not interested in this, then we put the stick into our laptop or the machine we want to set up. And usually we have to, if it's an existing machine, we have to change the boot order to load from this boot stack. That's not so easy to find. It's either escape F10 or F12 to get it to the BIOS. You have to find it out. While it's booting, you will find it. You tell it, do not boot from the HDD, but from the USB stick, and that's a difficult thing if you made it. The Ubuntu installer is self-explaining. We would recommend it to use a LAN cable and not using Wi-Fi, because it's a further step to set up Wi-Fi, and you have a stable net, you wanted to have it on a LAN. This is a screenshot. You have to use the right keyboard so you can see how easy an installer will do it. You do not have to check the right keyboard, but you have to press one of the following buttons and the setup will find it out by itself. While the installation, you have can check a checkbox whether you want to have SSH, to have remote control on the machine. You usually want to know that. You can decide if you follow it with your keyboard on this machine. But if you want to work from your admin machine, you install SSH with, and with its step, you put that machine into one edge of the room and work from your usual computer. And then you should install public key authentication, not password authentication. So now we're coming to Docker. Docker is our application. Docker is one solution for virtual machines. For virtual machines, usually in my virtual, I have a system in my virtual machine and all the libraries I need. So I have some of these guest systems, and for a system for like Docker, the container engine uses operating system, is a using operating system, and serves the single libraries and apps. That has an advance that everything is much smaller. Per container, I need less of the disk, less of RAM. The startup is much quicker because on the other side, the whole system has to start. And the page system is much easier, so we take Docker for it. For Docker, to Docker by itself, there's a repo, there are manuals how to install it. It's not too difficult. There are some commands in the command line, and usually you just throw it into the bash and it will install Docker. And there's a Word container. What does it do? It downloads a test container. It's a very good end-to-end test. You know that Docker can start and it's correctly installed. Then we have Dockers at the surrounding. So there are a few applications running, like for perhaps Jenkins. For what we want to use it, that Jenkins will do regular jobs. You can set it up perhaps once a week. It's part of our operation part. It's a little bit nicer, like in a con. And I have a nice GUI. And we want to automate all boring things by itself. The on-site backup, the off-site backup to anywhere. So you have to cron to start a cron PHP on the Nextcloud, which does everything by itself. The jobs, you can see that the jobs all worked. The Jenkins we installed native. We need some more config steps for that, so we decided to install it native. You can do it simply in the shell. You can start a setup with plugins by default. You can test Jenkins with it.
I'll show you Jenkins later. Now I'll talk about my security architecture. The initial plan is you have the internet out here in the blue cloud, and we only want web requests to come in. That is the only access that we're going to allow from the outside into our home net. The router has port forwarding into our server. So that's port 443, and on our server, that is responded by the proxy manager. So the server will speak SSL for you and decrypt it, and then it will send the unencrypted requests to the next cloud, which runs on the same box. Jenkins and the configuration user interface is only accessible from the local network, so it's not accessible from the outside. Again, on Nextcloud. Nextcloud is composed of two Docker containers. First one is the application container. It's an Apache web server and the Nextcloud source code. And Nextcloud also needs a database. For very small installations, you could possibly use SQLite, but here for this installation, we're going to use, for 2-3 users, we use Postgres. Nextcloud has a plugin architecture, so plugins need to get updates separately. And that is something that we're going to do with Jenkins. And in Docker, you have volumes, which are file containers that you configure. And we have made one for pictures, one for logs, and one for configuration files. We are starting this via a Docker Compose file. And this is called Infrastructure as Code. I have a single file, which you see on the right-hand side. And that file describes how the containers should be started. This is the name of the container. That is the image of the container. Always wants the latest one. The database needs to be started. Here we have given the port. These are the file containers, and here are the network connections. And I give it some configuration parameters. So in a single file, I describe everything for the hosting of this thing. Probably you want to make your own repository. And so you don't want to use ours because we could change it at a late point and inject code into your system. So here it says take Nextcloud latest, which means take always the freshest. So here you see Jenkins. I can use the mouse to make more jobs. Let's zoom in a bit. We don't have that much time, but I'll show you a few things about Jenkins. Here I've got a job for cronphp update, and I've made a job for patching. So when they show a sun icon, then everything went well. If you get a cloud, then something went wrong. So here's a Jenkins-specific language, and it defines the pipeline. In our repo, you find samples for these pipelines. So here I'm defining a single agent, and I'm saying, on that agent, please do the following commands. So here's a shell script. Go into the compose file. Fetch the latest containers. When I'm done with this, then please stop the whole system and then start it again. And then the patching is done. Here in Jenkins, I can easily say, do it time controlled. So I'm saying every 5 minutes. So it's a syntax from the cron daemon. So here, for our test, I have done a few jobs, and here you can see the log file from one of those jobs. The Jenkins collects those logs, and you can review them individually. First, it fetches the containers. Here, you watch the download. Yes. So after downloading everything, and then eventually starts unpacking it. Okay, further down it has extracted it. And finally it says, I've fetched the latest ones, I'll stop the old ones and I'll start the new ones. This took 3 or 4 minutes. And the 3 to 4 minutes are probably the download. So shutting down the container and restarting was only a few seconds because I didn't restart the whole operating system. And Jenkins is a Java application, so Jenkins tells me everything went fine, so I'm happy.
All right. If you want to boot the Nextcloud container and you find this and you find this nice login page, and we really don't want that, but we still have it here. And once you have to create an administrator account, this isn't really completely configured, the Nextcloud, but I really have to create an admin user and have to come up with a name for an admin and a password. And then there's something about the connections to the other container that needs to be set up. But then you do say, then you say install, and then everything else installs automatically, except one thing that you need to do in the order in which we have documented here. Nextcloud will see from which domain a request is coming, and the order in which we recommend it here is at this time we haven't, when we really create the account and we don't really have any connection to the internet of the Nextcloud, so we're still only in the local network. But if we really want to be able to call it by the external domain, I'll explain how to get a domain later. And then internally, I have to edit this configuration file. It's config.php. It's a bit ugly, but our experience is that sooner or later you will have to edit it anyway. So we will show you in our repo in a one-liner how to do that in a Docker container, and it's not that complicated. It's really a single line just. And so DIN-DNS. So we are moving towards allowing external access to our Nextcloud. DNS, I don't have to explain it now, because right following this is a DNS talk where you learn everything. But what you need to know is that in the internet, servers are addressed by their IP addresses, but we don't want to remember IP addresses, but we want to use the domains such as 38c3.fun. And our public IPs from our home connections are not statically. You can have that, but it's expensive and complicated, but they may change occasionally. So if you want to connect that, a nice domain name and changing IP addresses, there's Dynamic DNS who offer automation to change that. So we sign up with them, tell them which our domain is, and then whenever there's a new IP, we will tell you, and then it will remain reachable from the outside. So there's a few screenshots. You can't probably really read that, but we have an example, and there are lots of examples. There are different service providers for dynamic DNS. It's not special anymore. Where we have the most experience is inwx.de in Berlin, where they have their data centers. And we also bought our domain names there. And they also offer dynamic DNS in a package. And here you can see the first screenshot where how you buy a domain. So 38c3.fun is still free. And if you want to have a dynamic DNS account, then you really, again, come up with a username and password and tell them the domain that you just bought. And then in your router at home, you have to set it up. And this is our example in the Fritzbox, which offers that out of the box. and as do some other routers. You can tell it to use dynamic DNS, and you tell them which provider you use, and the router at home immediately knows when there's a new IP, and it will really tell the DIN DNS provider so that it can continue to work seamlessly, even if you have a dynamic IP address at home. All right, that was it in short. And now we have set up our domain, we have a running Nextcloud, and we really want to use HTTPS, that is encrypted traffic from the outside. And in our setup, we did that manually with an Nginx reverse proxy and used CertBot from Let's Encrypt, and it works. It's not too difficult, you can just do it. But then we found an Nginx proxy manager, which makes it even easier. The Nginx proxy manager is whatever I showed you. It's all packaged inside of that, and it offers a graphical user interface, which you can operate with a browser. And with very simple steps, you can set it up. And for example, you can use that, and then you can use the config that is created and put it into a normal Nginx. But we can use that as a complete solution, and it also works pretty well. All right, so that's where we want to be in the end. There's the internet cloud. Okay, there's Let's Encrypt, and between that is our router. And we really want only 443, port 443, only encrypted HTTPS. And it should go until the Nginx proxy manager and then decrypt the traffic and pass it on to the host that offers the actual service, in our case, Nextcloud. And you can offer a host of other services via the Nginx proxy manager and use that side by side. Andy just showed you the Docker Compose, or hinted at that, and we have one big Docker Compose where the Nextcloud is inside there, and as the third app, there's also the Nginx proxy manager. So if you use that Docker Compose, then the proxy manager will also run, and inside your intranet, it can be accessed via port 80 or port 81. So you really have to imagine it like you have an SSL certificate, and it's extremely easy. On the left side, there's a box, and you put in your domain name, an email address, and the terms of service, agree to the terms of service of Let's Encrypt, and click on Save, and then everything else happens automatically in the background. And an SSL request is sent to Let's Encrypt. They do all the handshaking and check everything that you are really reachable on that domain, and then you will receive a certificate. And then you have set it up correctly, and then you really have to set up the forwarding to your Nextcloud server. This is the second screen. There, here you can see the port where the Nextcloud is reachable. And in the second step, you tell them which certificate to use to authenticate your server to the internet. And you put the same as you said in the first step. And that's really all you need to do. And then we are done. So, and we are in the internet. And so you did everything you need to do to have an internet reachable Nextcloud. And here's a short outlook for the next steps. The next steps are you have to set up backups, and a backup is only a backup if it's been tested. Otherwise, it isn't really a backup. So, and if you want to know all the rest, look into our repository, because we really have run out of time. Sorry.
So we have 10 minutes left for questions and answers. Please hold up your hands and we come to you. So now we're too quick.
Always getrennt machen oder?
Können wir zusammen machen? Okay, sorry.
Jo, vielen Dank für euren Talk. Ich habe eine Frage.
So, thank you very much for your talk. I have a question about the backup and also the impulse to say that this is a possibility between the autonomous self-hosting also really make connections to other projects. So I'm asking how you do your backup. Is that also completely controlled by you? And the second is also connected to that, the idea of decentralization and to question the dependencies on commercial providers. And in the end, it's often about, even if there are such impulses with these talks, then to spread the knowledge. And so at least one is a cis male admin to have to administer that. And then maybe it needs the impulse to question dependencies. And so the question is, for your project, what happens if one person, if something happens to one person, and how do you manage to question dependencies? Right. And maybe the invitation to others on day three, there's a meetup for feminist servers, and I've really been involved in that for a while, and it really requires a lot of technical knowledge, which may be scary at first, and but there are moments now where it seems less dangerous and more approachable. So on day three, 2 o'clock, that's Chaos Feminist Servers, and yeah, you're all cordially invited.
Yeah, the second was rather a statement. Go to there, very good. The question for the backup, there were two questions for the backup. The one was a technical, really existing backup, and the second thing was a personal backup. If one of the admin persons drops out, there are different possibilities. We have two possibilities already tested for our service we have running. The one is, as we had two hard drives, we did a nightly backup from one hard drive to the other hard drive. It helps if one hard drive dies, but not if the flat burns down. So meanwhile, we have with some other friends a VPN connection. So this is easy with a Fritzbox nowadays, but there are 1,000 other possibilities. So we have a VPN connection to their backups, and we do with Borg backups encryption. So backups over that. It doesn't help against every attack, but the flat can burn down and the data is still there. A personal backup, if one of the others drops out, our complete setup is in repos. It's documented. It can be reconstructed very simply. When we both die, how can it be accessed? I don't have a spontaneous answer. In the most companies, the bus factor is 1 and we have 2. So, and to Borg backup, we have 1, 2 or 3 terabyte usable data, but it has non-terabyte. And it's very easy to make snapshots, and it saves only the difference between. So I can recommend Borg backups. So,
any more questions?
Und haltet euch kurz.
So just talk about it briefly.
Einmal zu dem Thema persönliches Backup.
For the topic of personal backup, you can share your SSH key with others in paper form. And if something happens to me, you can open the envelope. I do it with a friend of mine. And the repo, can that be backed up as a Synology, and can that be used there?
It's a very good question. So we did not use a Synology NAS. A friend of us has one, and the most of them can use Docker containers, but I don't know if they work with Docker Compose. At least the Jenkins, you have to start as a container and you have to manage the Jenkins. Can tell the Synology NAS some things so it can exchange the containers. So if it's an API as a skin.
You said that you're using VPN. Why don't you use VPN as a primary means instead of port forwarding?
Yes, for VPN can be used. Or is much more secure, but it's more complicated. We have the use case. If my mother wants to send me a big file, it's quite difficult. If I tell her send me by Dropbox, they have to make accounts, and in the next cloud, it can simply upload it and without installing a VPN. With all the config things, we use VPN, and all admin support are just VPN. And it's very comfortable. And all the Nextcloud clients, you always have to run VPN. Just one addition, we have in our own use case two parallel Nextclouds, one for public things and one that is not in internet, that has not all the things for the internet outside. You can do it easily. You can run easily a lot of Nextclouds parallel. That's one user story for the use case I want to offer other people a service. And I can tell my grandmother to install a VPN.
Okay, last question.
I
wanted to ask about extension of disks. RAID, is that user-friendly or not?
The last range we have a RAID. We have a Z-RAID. We have it. You can do it. But a RAID is not a backup, people.
Nein, den RAID-Teil haben wir nicht mit dokumentiert.
No, we did not document RAID. We want to do it low level to the question from before. Don't worry to start it. Every step is documented, but there are such a complex ideas are not integrated in that. You have a hard drive in your notebook, you install it in Ubuntu, and you work with it, and you don't have a RAID in that. And you don't start with ZF for the beginning. And we are told now to disappear. We are changing now over to the bar, and we would like to have a good talk. Thank you.